Welcome to another exciting episode of Video Game Bang. Video Game Bang. Your weekly source for all things video game. Featuring your fearless hosts, Corey Vincent.
I'm pretty much Microsoft and Marvel. The cans are on. If the ish gets real. You can get shot during the day.
And Aaron Carter.
Buy the armor, I equip it, and it's like Pink Thong. The guy that delivers vending machine items in my job. He could play the Rhino.
Fill up your Mountain Dew and grab your Doritos. It's time for Video Game Bang.
What is up, pizzas? It is Corey Vincent, host of the Video Game Bang podcast. Joined with me, as always, my great friend. If we were NWA, he would probably be Ice Cube.
I'll accept that.
Aaron Carter.
What's up, people?
For once, you accept it?
I will accept that. Heck yeah.
You take it.
Think about all the other NWA members.
He would be Eazy-E, Steven Gutierrez.
Wow.
Why do I got to have AIDS?
Exactly. And die. Jeez.
And who's the other person in NWA that's not...
You don't know any other people, do you?
MC Yella. Mark Griffin.
Wow.
Jade Arena.
You don't even know who that is, do you?
I don't. Yeah. I really don't.
Because no one does.
I thought you were going to go MC Ren.
Oh, that was DJ Ren.
Whatever.
Basically, they don't matter, those other people.
And like, I am your host, Dr. Dre.
Wow.
Wow.
You know nobody liked him at the end, right?
Let's see. The podcast. Check us out. iTunes and Stitcher. You can always go to the SoundCloud, download our episodes. We're on the Zune store. And as always, nerdreactor.com under the podcast tab. And also, if you guys want to be lazy, go to a search bar, type in www.videogamebang.com, and that takes you straight to our podcast page. You guys know that?
It's back.
It's brand new. Yep.
No, yeah, I've seen that.
I've been there once or twice.
He hasn't seen it, people. So, also, go back to our last shows. They've been really good. We've been getting some more fan reaction than we have before. I appreciate guys.
We're getting a couple of hates, if I've heard.
Hey, you got to take the good. You take the good. You take the bad. You put it together.
There you have.
Then you have the facts.
Angare.
Yeah.
Then
you have Angare. He's mainly the angry guy. Check out our last episode, please. Indie Weekend Bang. Aaron Carter led us on a magical tour of indie video games where we looked at some of the winners from
the finalists from the Independent Game Festival.
Yes, the IGF.
2014.
And there were some winners and there were some sore losers.
There were some very sore losers.
I'm sorry. And we gave him a chance. The invitation is still open, Angare.
Yeah.
If you are listening, you want a chance. The game could be awesome. That's the thing. But it was just his trailer was so bad.
Was the trailer that I think I found was just like a swirly symbol.
That's correct.
That's it?
Yeah.
And then I was trying to tell him, like, I didn't understand it. It didn't make me want to play the game. And he said something to the effect of...
you're stupid.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I don't understand games, so I don't like the... I don't know. It didn't make sense, bro. Come on here. Let us play the game. Let us tell you our thoughts. On the other side of the coin, though, Aaron and I did get to play the other indie game.
Yeah, the Cyber Heist.
The multiplayer.
It was an alpha, so it was, you know, a little rough. But I had fun with it. I could see the potential in it big time.
And if nothing else, these guys need to stick with this game because, like, I didn't see any story. It was just kind of like level to level.
Yeah, it was just like puzzle, get from point A to point B. And, you know, they had small opposition, like bots and stuff coming at you, but they didn't really do anything once they saw you. They kind of just touched you, and then it just said game over. So, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done. It's alpha.
Something
kind of like that I made a game with zombies in it where they touch you and you're dead.
It was very rough. It was very
old school classic
games.
But
it's an alpha, but shows major potential.
Extreme potential. I mean, and I was talking to a friend at work today because I annoy all my friends at work about video games.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a huge difference between multiplayer and co-op.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
This game is definitely co-op.
Oh, yeah. It's hardcore co-op.
But there's some blurred lines when it comes to multiplayer and co-op.
Don't quit your day job.
Does your average person, you believe, thinks multiplayer is co-op?
Yeah.
That's just falsehood.
Yeah. That's co-op, falsehood. Though, well, even in the, I remember my old, like my first, when I first learned the word co-op was from playing Twisted Metal 2. And you go to co-op mode, and it's two players, and you're just doing the same thing you do in single player. It's not real co-op.
No, that's more multiplayer.
That's multiplayer. So even, you know, there's stuff. But this game is co-op. It takes two.
Yeah, it's like they took co-op to the next level because it's two different games essentially that merge together as one.
Yeah.
And it works perfectly. And if you don't clip through the floor and fall straight off the level like I did.
So I'm going to try and get other people on this. I think we should spread the word on
rally
this one.
Behind it. Yeah,
if definitely. This game succeeds and games like this succeed, more will come of it. And it might be these guys. Maybe they'll get a Kickstarter running and do a full feature version.
They need to come on the show, talk about it.
Yeah. The gauntlet has been thrown down, even though it's...
And Gary will come up next. Yeah. Talk about theirs. We have co-op, too.
Yeah.
You draw circles together.
But we would never know.
He is pissed off.
I'm
now.
Sorry, Gary. I'm a sorry.
Bunch of dicks.
See, you know, the thing is, I respect game developers so much, though, because, you know, they're enabling us to do what we love to do.
Yeah, I love them.
But, you know... Listen to us. Don't fight with us.
Probably hire somebody to make your trailers from now on.
I will make your trailers.
Constructive criticism is something. You got to be able to take it.
It's constructive. Don't feel bad. I appreciate you as a person. I just think your game looks stupid.
Wow.
Let's see. World news. Anybody watch the Grammys, huh?
Parts?
None.
No.
I knew what I was getting into when I put Grammys on the agenda today. I was like, these guys don't pay attention.
Did Kanye West do something crazy?
No.
No. There's a...
Beyonce was something else.
She basically had sex with Jay-Z on the stage.
Well, I mean, it's her husband. She can do that.
On the stage?
Yes.
Telling me you wouldn't have sex with
Jay-Z? He's
worth
$500 million.
And my wife listens to the show, so absolutely
wow.
Not.
I saw a cool little GIF where they showed Ryu kicking Taylor Swift in the head over and over again.
Oh, because during her performance.
She was whipping her hair back. That was pretty awesome, but I think that was the highlight of the show for
me. You know who really stole the show was that Imagination Dragons and Kendrick.
I had a coworker who told me that. Yeah, I got to download that.
Yeah, I heard it. I could overhear it.
What you playing?
This is, of course, the What You Playing theme song.
What you playing?
Brought to you by Imagine Dragons. Exactly. And Kendrick Lamar.
And before we go any further in the show, I would like to stop and say that any views or opinions shared by Aaron Carter are not necessarily the views and opinions of the rest of the show and video gaming as an entity. So,
but they are the views and opinions of the world.
Yeah,
so.
And we'll get into that a little bit later. Steven Gutierrez, what you playing?
More Assassin's Creed 3.
Wow.
It's kind of just left it there.
You're the second person I know that's the game you're actively playing.
I have a coworker that's playing that, actually, too. He keeps telling me about it.
Yeah, and it's not even the newest one. That's interesting.
Why not Black Flag?
Yeah, I think it's the people who are behind.
I need a beat 3 to get to.
Okay.
Okay.
Black Flag? Make sure I say that right.
Yeah. It's a whole different podcast. Let's see. Jada, what you playing?
Besides teaching you guys and playing some little league, carrying you guys, I actually, after our Vita binge, I've been going... back and I've been playing Soul Sacrifice. I've been trying to finish that off to 100%.
That was a good one. Yeah, I like that one.
Now, you've said a little while back ago, I want to get your updated opinion on it. Have you played any more Bravely Default?
I've actually maxed out the demo, so I'm just waiting for Friday to come so I can pick it up and lose the rest of my life.
Definitely a buy?
Oh, 100%. 100% okay. Bang, day one. Like, if you're not picking this one up day one, you don't like classic Final Fantasy games.
Or you don't have a 3DS.
Or you don't have a 3DS.
Or you're broke.
A lot of reasons not to pick this up. Seems like that, huh?
Aaron,
League of Legends. I literally just stopped playing League of Legends. I had a coworker ask me, I never saw you as a League of Legends person, and I replied, I didn't either.
Yeah.
And and some Cyber Heist, of course.
Cyber Heist and League of Legends, yeah. And, you know, that's the highest compliment I guess you can give Cyber Heist, is that it actually pulled us away from League of Legends for 30 minutes or 40 minutes, whatever we did.
Crashed a couple of times, but it's alpha, everybody. It's alpha, so it's very, very early.
I am also playing League of Legends.
A lot.
Man, yeah. Yeah, I installed it on my work computer.
That is sad.
Yeah. You guys are hooked. I told you guys. I've been telling you guys since 09 in beta when I started.
But it's still, I still hold strong that I would love a controller. Because, like, I've played, there's the Lord of the Rings game on the Xbox 360. Mm-hmm. It's the same type of MOBA.
Mm-hmm.
It's very watered down. But what I focused on was, can the controls be translated to League of Legends? And I feel like it could.
The biggest thing is with League, when you guys get to the higher levels and stuff, when you're ranked up, it requires such twitch timing and looking across the map and paying attention to everywhere that you just can't really do with a controller.
The looking across the map, definitely you can't do. You definitely can't do that.
I'd like to also interrupt and notice that, you know, when we first learned how to play the game, we learned how to play, and then I think it was the next day, Aaron and
I
got pitted 1v1.
You know what? I'm glad that you started that out when we were learning how to play the game.
No, you guys did a random, and it just put you guys against each other?
No, we set up one.
Okay, we set up a 1v1. Adam was actually giving him all sorts of advice, completely neglecting me, which was fine because I didn't need it.
And then why don't you explain the characters
let's pick characters. I want to hear champions. Which champions are you guys playing?
Did anybody play a Sexbot 9000?
Nobody played a Sexbot 9000.
I play a Sexbox 9000.
There we go.
I played as Gnossus.
Okay.
Gnossus, okay.
And you played as?
Fiddlesticks.
Okay, so Gnossus, for viewers out there who don't know, Gnossus is a bruiser, high HP, high damage, takes time to
usually,
farm.
That's the key point, who usually gets stronger. By the 44th minute of the game.
Yeah, the longer the game goes, the better Gnossus is.
I didn't choose his character form. We could have chose any character in the world, and he chose Gnossus. He thought that was the character to beat me.
Yeah. That was the character I was learning with.
Mm-hmm. And whereas Fiddlesticks is a caster with a lot of CC crowd control, which he is an expert in disabling his opponents, which kind of shuts down Gnossus.
Shuts down Gnossus 100% of the time,
Steven,
seems like.
You look like you have something to say.
Who the hell names these characters?
You respect, sir.
I wish I could be named
the voice actor of Gnossus passed away. Rest
did
in peace.
Did he really?
Yeah, he did.
No, I didn't say who does the voice. I said who names
I'm
these characters.
I'm just saying respect Gnossus.
A guy named Fiddlesticks?
Fiddlesticks
is awesome.
Fiddlesticks is actually
he's like their
good.
Version of Jack Skellington.
He's like a scarecrow type thing or whatnot. He's awesome.
Yeah.
What other names do you have on these characters? Like, I've never played the game.
An archer.
Ash Ketchum.
There is...
I can go through and start naming them if you want.
Any ridiculous ones, though.
Ridiculous ones. There's Cho'Gath.
There you go.
He's a creature from the void.
Done.
There's Kassadin. Let's see. There's
Master Yi.
Misfortune.
Master Yi. Misfortune.
That's cool. I can
Misfortune.
Yeah, Misfortune.
As in Miss.
My favorite.
Fortune.
Katarina.
There you go.
That's my favorite.
A normal name, okay.
Mm-hmm. They've got some
about,
normal ones in there.
What's the dude that looks like Gambit?
Gambit, that would be Twisted Fate.
Twisted Fate. That's the only one that I'm like, that doesn't sound like your name.
Jeff Hardy? Deals of Luck.
Plagiarism. Plagiarism.
Twisted Fate. Yeah. It always goes back to wrestling.
Wow.
Mm. Let's see. Anybody watch that State of the Union? I'm just going to keep bringing
Seriously?
Up
things we don't watch.
Aaron, did you watch your boy Barack?
I was writing, actually, going on. No. I was writing
Aaron
articles.
Carter did the
political
joke.
I was writing articles.
Covered California thing.
No. So I don't even know what he talked about.
Let's get into some video game news, people. Let's see. Man, we need a theme song for this. Go ahead, Steven.
Exactly.
Go ahead and give us.
You want
me to
do a theme song?
Yeah, that's what you do.
That's what I. That's the other.
That's the other.
Which we're gonna get to later in the show. We have a special interview with the composer from Titanfall. His name is Steven Barton.
No relation to Clint Barton.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he is not Hawkeye's brother.
No.
So first news story: Satoru Iwata. Takes 50% pay cut until June when then they will reevaluate.
You got that?
Like for his job?
Who wrote this crap?
I don't know.
I think it's for his probably
or
just
for,
his pay more.
But
it's reevaluation like a, for like as the company.
So for those who don't know, Satoru Iwata is the president of Nintendo, and that shows how much he loves his company.
Japan doesn't believe in presidents; they believe in emperors.
Well, he's the emperor of Nintendo, and like I said. That's how much he loves his company. That he'll take a pay cut because they're not doing well.
Did you say China?
It's in Japan.
He said
okay,
Japan.
Good. I'm just making sure.
Don't be racist.
Sorry.
Jesus
David,
Christ,
I apologize.
We previously reported that they what?
Tanked.
Projection?
Officially
yeah,
tanked.
They officially tanked. So, I mean, this is just his move saying, hey, I believe in this company so much that I'm going to lower my pay.
Which I respect.
What do the samurai call that?
Seppuku.
Seppuku. That's exactly what that is.
No, that would probably be admitting
that
defeat.
He would by then he'd take 0%. Like he would get nothing.
Well, these are business people. Can you think of any other American? Let's put this away. Can you imagine American CEO doing this?
No.
They'll be like, we'll take a cut from your check.
Yeah,
they'll just fire a bunch of people.
Exactly. Yeah.
What we see is they freeze bonuses and pay rates.
Exactly.
Increases.
And then that freezing doesn't necessarily mean take away either. That just means they'll hold it and then they'll give it to them. You know,
it's very honorable to do.
But they're good. I mean, I don't know what this is going to do to help them, but you know, basically, like in the long run, I mean.
I think it's just their, you know, kind of the payroll side and helped keep the investors and everybody on that side happy.
They need to make a move.
On Monday, reports surfaced from a Japanese publication called Nikkei. Is that how I'm saying that? Nikkei?
Nikkei.
Claiming
Nikkei's.
That yeah, whatever.
Wow.
Claiming good that Nintendo adjustment. Was planning to release mini games on the smartphones and tablets. And we kind of talked about this last week as well.
Mm-hmm.
But since there's already been an official statement that says Nikkei's article contains information previously stated by Mr. Iwata during a press conference.
Past press conference,
including statements which relate to Nintendo's willingness to make use of smart devices to promote our products. However, during such past announcement, Mr. Iwata has also stated that Nintendo's intention is not to make Nintendo software available on smartphone devices. So they shut that one down.
Yeah.
Which is good. I think that would just water down Nintendo's, mm-hmm. you know, their iconic nature.
Well, what's the... Mark, you weren't here last week.
Mm-mm.
Huge Nintendo fan.
Yeah. Honestly, I think what Nintendo needs to do is they need to snatch up some exclusives. They need to lock down Mega Man. They need to talk to Capcom. Basically, they're already getting them in Smash. They need to lock down the next Mega Man's, but it's just exclusive to Nintendo. I think that's what Nintendo needs to do is they need new IPs, and then they need to lock down current IPs that are already out. That are popular, that
but
vibe
still,
well with Nintendo.
It's, even if give them Mega Man, give them Crash Bandicoot. I mean, these are all still like kid properties, right?
Yeah, it's Nintendo. Nintendo's never been that bloody, gory. I mean, they get some of those games that'll launch on there, you know. But I don't think that's really...
I think that's what they need to do. They need a mature IP,
something
because what? That's something they haven't touched on. They have their normal Mario, Link, all that stuff. They have those characters. What they need to do is get the adult version of those characters, like not of them, but just like new ones.
So let's say, for example, Nintendo locked down Titanfall, and Titanfall was a Nintendo exclusive, not an Xbox exclusive. Okay. Would that have saved the console?
No,
I don't think so.
Because their audience is already picked out.
So what Mark just said is they need an adult themed title that's exclusive. So Titanfall is arguably the biggest one on the horizon.
But
so how would
Nintendo,
that not save
Nintendo
it?
For years has already carve their niche out, which is those you know smaller kids and stuff like that. They put in a M-rated title on their console would just be a desperate act that would be seen as desperate, and I don't think people would gravitate towards Nintendo just because it's on there.
Yeah, and I mean, we saw this with the Wii. They had No More Heroes that was originally exclusive, Mad World that was originally exclusive, both very bloody, gory, mature rated games. But
it didn't gravitate. It didn't get a lot of people to move over.
Yeah.
It just, I mean, they both got ported over eventually to other systems,
so,
to hardcore systems.
Mark, details you missed from last week also were that let's look at historically. Nintendo was gaming for a while. For NES and Super NES.
Yeah.
Yep.
Then GameCube, N64, also huge.
Mm-hmm.
But then GameCube was considered a flop.
Yeah.
Financially, it was just, I mean, it had some of the greatest games, but it was a flop.
It was just, I think really it was everybody was getting into that. Sony really just stepped up that whole period of time when the GameCube launched, and there just wasn't enough to gravitate. Gamers were, it was a time of change, and Nintendo just didn't step up enough when they launched the GameCube, whereas Sony did.
So it failed, and then they came out with Wii, which was a hit, but then the Wii U fails again. Do they have it in them to make another console, or are they done?
Definitely. Nintendo, I would never count them out of the race. I think the biggest thing is that the Wii captured that very casual first-time gamer audience, and that audience doesn't need a new console every 4 or 5 years.
That's the big thing.
So come another, you know, next console cycle, those casual gamers, when Nintendo comes out with their new next revolutionary thing, whatever that's going to be, Wiimotes on our feet, I don't know. That's when Nintendo's going
to
pick back up.
But
I think
it has to be. It has to be extremely revolutionary.
It does,
because
Nintendo needs
Wii remotes change the game for everything. There's motion and everything now, but Nintendo's big problem was they didn't grow up with their audience. So whenever their audience grew up and wanted more hardcore stuff, Sony and Microsoft provided that. Nintendo was like, well, we still have kids to go after, so that's what we're doing.
That's a pedophile thing.
There it is.
EA trashed Wii U again, pretty big time, a major burn, because I remember we reported it months ago when he you know, was mentioning why there's no good sports titles. And then EA kind of backtracked a little bit and said that, oh, no, we don't hate Nintendo. We'd make sure. And then again, now they really stuck the dagger deep. And the quote was, Nintendo was dead to us very quickly. Wow. It became a kids' IP platform, and we don't really make games for kids. That was pretty true across the other labels, too. Even Mass Effect title on Wii U, which was a solid effort, could never do big business. And EA, like Activision, is only focused on games that can be huge franchises.
And that harkens back to what I said. Even if you put an M-rated title on there, mm-hmm. people are not just going to gravitate towards it just because it's M-rated. I mean, it's sad, but that's just Nintendo.
My hope, as and this is completely impartial, and just as a gamer, I really hope Nintendo doesn't make another console. And that they license out their characters to
no.
the
no.
That's my hope.
Did you not just
honestly,
read that he took a 50% cut?
Yeah, Nintendo.
They would rather die before. Yes. They'll throw all the software in the ocean.
Even though he's throwing it in the ocean.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much.
The Mario exactly. Tea Party.
Mario Tea Party. There we go.
Yeah.
Mario
Battleships
Tea Party.
Of Sony and Microsoft will be floating over there while they're just tossing stuff in the ocean. Just to get so nobody touches it. That's their child. Like, that's their baby.
Yeah.
And they will never let that stuff go. If they do, I would lose so much
respect
well, for that company. Yeah.
There's more people make decisions in these companies than just the president. There's boards and owners to.
That's true.
You know, empire. They could twist his arm. They can get him out of there. I mean, it could happen. It's not out beyond possibility. And for me, as just a fan and a gamer who doesn't want to own all the consoles, I'd like to.
They
could have
got him out
the
there when the GameCube was tanking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they stick by their people.
Yeah.
So I mean, they're going to do it.
Japanese culture and their business models are completely different from American.
That's true.
So I mean, they're one of those things. They literally will go down with the ship before they.
Yeah, Microsoft will can you if you didn't sell anything.
I don't see hardware fixing their problem though.
I
no,
don't
it's
either.
Not. It's software. It's exactly, it is literally
yeah,
a software
that's what
thing.
I'm saying. Like they need. To do something about their games that they have. Like,
they just need to, I think, go ahead.
That's what they need to do. You can go ahead.
Take their franchises and make them stellar. That's all they
need. Yeah, they just need to, I think more releases, mm-hmm. you know, from the big fabled ones. We need to see more Fire Emblems. We need to see more Metroids. We need to see more Smash Brothers, you know.
And big releases of them, not just the handheld releases of them. Big,
you know, like, I honestly, like, I am really split on the Smash Brothers for the 3DS. Like, it's always been a console thing for me. Yeah, it's kind of. I see them trying to branch out and get that 3DS market, which is great for them for sales. But I feel like Smash Brothers would have been out this year for sure if they weren't doing a 3DS, if they weren't splitting their attention.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of what they're doing is they are trying to do too much. At the same time, they're not doing enough in the right directions.
Switching over gears to Microsoft, they recently acquired Gears of War from Epic Games.
I saw that.
Yeah, that's good.
That's a big move.
I'm happy.
You know who I'm happy for? The real winner in that situation, to me, is Epic Games.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They have room to grow now. They've got the budget now, the money.
That series was done.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, they created a monster franchise, told the story over probably too many games, you know.
And just ended it.
Should have been one game, yes.
Yeah, and you see this happen. They run their projects, get bored, want to do something else.
It came to a close.
So, Epic,
ended.
Yeah.
Epic, Microsoft didn't buy Epic. They just
they
bought
just
that
bought,
franchise.
No, they just bought the franchise.
So they own everything.
So Epic is just going to work on something different.
Yeah, which is good. That's why I'm totally happy with that.
Bulletstorm 2.
God,
wow.
No. Please, no.
What in the world?
Please, no.
Bulletstorm 2.
No Bulletstorms
And you
ever.
Know what? Somebody's probably listening. It's a good idea. Let's
let's
green light Bulletstorm, everybody. Cliff, get on it.
It ends in a cliffhanger.
The previous, so they got all the previous game assets, the rights to produce future games, and they're handing it over to Black Tusk Studios.
That's racist.
I don't know.
That's what Aaron calls his penis.
Let's get
wow.
Black Tusk Studio. Hey, baby, welcome to Black Tusk Studio.
Oh, goodness.
That's where we're going today. That's terrible.
So, Black Tusk, they haven't put out a game yet, have they?
Black Tusk? I've never even heard of them.
I think they have. It's nothing big, though.
It used to be, under Black Tusk label, because they were Microsoft Vancouver before.
Oh, Canadians, huh?
Yeah, and they switched to Black Tusk, and they were tasked with creating the next big franchise, and it looks like they gave up on that dream, and they're just going to make another, another Gears.
We don't know what to do. Let's
but
just
do we
buy
really,
it,
I mean, do we really want to go back to that universe?
To Gears?
There's a lot. There's a following. but not.
There's
not,
a following.
I don't think it's in this
haven't
room.
Haven't they wrapped up everything?
Yeah, for the most part. And I mean, Judgment was like a prequel type story. Yeah. So they even wrapped up.
They wrapped
stuff.
Everything with the locusts. I mean, if they would add like a different,
they
type
got
of
to.
Species,
so then we're going
get rid of Marcus Phoenix. Please.
I mean, I think that's and then we're going into Halo. You know, it's what Halo did to breathe new life as they brought in the whatever that.
So that's what it seems like. Big franchises on the Xbox is going are eventually going to get bought by Microsoft, and then they just give it to their internal people and then just make something new out of it.
Pretty much.
Yeah, so it'll either desecrate it and ruin it for the old Gears fans. But that's one thing they did for consistency, which was pretty cool, is they got Rod Ferguson, not to be confused with Turd Ferguson.
Terrible.
To continue producing the series, and he made like 1 through 3.
That's cool.
So
there's continuity.
They're not bad yet, because Halo, to me, got a major rebirth with when Reach. Microsoft took it off.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't see it as a down at all. Like, I actually had more fun with that than the rest of the series.
I think Halo 4 was probably my favorite.
Really?
Yeah. I would probably go with that, too. Yeah.
Online, Halo 2. All day. All day!
No, I'm still going Halo 4.
No.
I'm still a Halo 1.
Halo 2.
I'm an original. OG.
BXRs. There was all sorts of cool stuff. All right, guys. We're going to be back with an interview with Steven Barton, the composer from Titanfall. Stick around after these messages.
Halo sucks.
Wow. That's terrible.
I waited for that one.
And welcome back to the Video Game Bang Podcast, where we are joined by an extremely special guest brought to us from NerdReactor.com. You know his work, even if you don't know him personally. You've heard his music on projects like How to Train Your Dragon, the Call of Duty series, and Modern Warfare 4. And now he will be the composer, the man behind the music of Titanfall. Say hello to Steven Barton.
Hey, guys.
Steven, thank you so much for joining us. Titanfall, obviously, this is the game that we are all looking for. Well, maybe not Steven, but the rest of us are really looking forward to this game.
you might want to clarify with Steven.
Yeah, oh, sorry. Steven, the composer, the talented Steven in the room.
Wow.
Thanks, Corey. That was a lovely compliment.
You're welcome, sir. Yep. So tell us, what is it like working on Titanfall?
Well, you know, something of this size, you know, when you first see it, and, you know, especially seeing it as it gets put together, it's pretty awesome, pretty humbling in some ways. You know, the visuals of it are so incredible, and the world they've created is such a sort of compelling new kind of story that it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. You know, definitely it's one of those things as you see it come together. It's the sum of many parts and many amazing sort of you know, graphic artists, digital, you know, coders, and it's insane. It's great fun.
When you got pulled into this project and they sat you down and they said, Steven, we know you're a talented composer already. That's check. This is our vision for the game. What were some of the outlines? What's the guidelines they gave you?
Well, it's interesting. It's sort of it's often kind of a moving target, because, you know, sometimes when you come on one of these things, if it's a film, for example, if you're working on a film, generally speaking, kind of everybody knows what it is. So, you know, if you looked at if you've read the script of the film, you sort of know what you're going to get, and it doesn't deviate a huge amount from that. But with a game, it's kind of it's sort of more of an evolutionary kind of process, I think. It's something where you come to it with sort of a much cleaner slate in a way. You're going to write, you're going to have a lot of music to write, but it's sort of the game sort of points the way, as you know. So the vision we sort of had with this one was to try and create something that was kind of a realistic sci-fi, and the idea being that, you know, this, you know, it's set however many hundred years in the future, and it's the idea that sort of, you know, it's not like Star Trek where doors, you know, need to go to open and, you know, or and sort of, you know, laser blast going left, right, and center. And it's more sort of rooted in kind of, you know, let's draw from like today and like draw a line and see, you know, sort of just, you know, obviously it's just one, you know, one world potential worldview of what could happen, but it's sort of realistically drawn. So, you know, cars still have four wheels and trees are still trees. And it's, you know, it's a world that's sort of both familiar and also has elements drawn into it that are, shall we say, alien. But so that was, you know, I think not detracting from that a lot was one of the sort of big ideas, and sort of trying to come up with something that sort of had a unique sound, and, you know, did something new whilst amping up the action and the tension, and, you know, sort of get, and it's an incredibly fast paced game is the other thing. So it was sort of how could we propel this to sort of be even faster and even more tense, and you know, with this multiplayer experience as well, to sort of make it interesting and variable, and, you know, all of these kind of aspects. So it was a very big sort of brief with you know, and at the outset, you know, that everyone knows that it's one of those things that can sort of evolve as you go on and you try things out and see what works.
There's no single player in Titanfall. It's only multiplayer. Did that create any challenges, or how was this different than your past experience in the games composing world?
Well, it's different. It's sort of the principal way it's different is that, you know, generally speaking, when you come with a single player game, there's elements of the game that are always going to be on some kind of rails. You know, so you could be going along and, you know, say in Call of Duty, there's one level towards the end where there's a big Jeep chase sequence, and you're sitting on the Jeep and you don't actually have control of the Jeep. And so we knew that sequence was going to be 2.5 minutes long. I mean, if you get killed in the middle of it, obviously you jump back a bit, but the sequence as a whole was 2.5 minutes long. So we could essentially write a piece of music that sort of, you know, kind of followed and tracked it the way you would do with a film. But obviously in the multiplayer environment, anything can happen. You know, sort of a map can start out very quietly, or it can start out with an absolute massive ton of activity. You never quite know what you're going to get. So it was sort of trying to write these pieces of music that would be able to work in that context and work in, you know, sort of segue into each other and sort of be used in different places and different contexts as the game sort of controls. And whilst not making it sound like it was sort of, you know, kind of old, like looped, a 10-second loop that goes around 100 times and becomes super annoying and you want to shoot yourself after, you know, the third time. So, you know, and it's sort of, and often with those things, it's, you know, if I think when you play games, if the music, if you sort of notice what the music's doing, if the music seems sort of conscious in a way of what's going on in the game, you get this really weird effect that it sort of draws you out of it. It takes away from the experience. So it's trying to find something that'll mesh with the whole, so you don't really notice the score being a sort of element on its own. It's just part of the whole. So that's kind of how you sort of go about it, but it's a little different for sure, because you're sort of writing less linearly. It's sort of less going from A to B and more going from A to B, A to C, A to D, you know, different options, different possibilities. So, it's a bit more of a puzzle to put together, and it's like putting a jigsaw puzzle together where you don't necessarily know what the picture is before you start. So
whenever you recorded all this at Abbey Road, right? That's what they said.
Yeah, we did.
It's like a famous place. Like, you know, I'm not huge into music, but I've even heard of that place. What was it like recording there with an orchestra, nonetheless?
Oh, well, I mean, this is Abbey's one of, you know, for a long time with film soundtracks, it's been, you know, one of the gold standards, and it's sort of, you know, you're in the room where Star Wars was done, where Indiana Jones was done, where all of the Lord of the Rings movies were done. You know, it's got this fabulous sound that makes it's larger than life. It's everything you sort of know from those films, and sort of, and even it's funny, even when you go into the room and sort of even people who've not sort of been in it, it has a sort of recognizable feel to it, a sound, but just because it's such a familiar kind of sound, you know, and everything from that to, like, you know, Pink Floyd was done. A lot of Pink Floyd stuff was done in there. And obviously the Beatles. That little Liverpudlian band who no one's heard of. so yeah, you know, it's this place with this amazing history, and you get the, you know, to use that on games And people have been doing it more and more and realizing that sort of this making it this big, larger than life sound is something that really brings something to the game and brings this aspect of weight and power and size to it. So,
was this your first time recording at Abbey Road?
No, well, I've been there many times on movies, but this was only the second. We did a little bit of Call of Duty there. We did some of the sort of like brass and guitar elements there, but it was just like a literal sort of half a day we spent there on Call of Duty 4, I think. And then, but then the majority of that was done in Seattle and then done in a couple of other places. So, but this is the first game where we treated it exactly like a movie from top to bottom and did, you know, kind of exactly what we would do on a $100 million movie. So it's sort of taking this sort of, you know, absolutely let's push this sound to the very best that it can be. I think in the strong belief that it really does show in the game when something really has a full rich kind of sound and sort of envelops you, it just adds to this sort of experience as a whole.
So Steven, you talked to us a little bit before the show. We're already practically feel like we've known each other forever, but for the people who weren't there on the conversation, why don't you tell us where are you originally from?
Well, I'm an import, as they say. I was originally from the UK. I was born up north near Birmingham in the UK, but then lived in London a lot. And I started my career about 12, 13 years ago. I was basically came straight out of school and was essentially going to take a year out. And 3 weeks in, a mutual friend introduced me in the sort of fluky way that these things happen to another very fine composer who wrote the music for the Metal Gear Solid franchise called Harry Gregson-Williams. And he gave me my start and gave me an opportunity to come out and sort of basically said he was working on what he described as a little animated movie, which later turned out to be Shrek.
Oh, wow.
but it was, you know, he said like, oh, do you want to come and, you know, lend a hand, come and, you know, do some arranging and write and sort of come out for a few weeks? And I said, sure, that'd be great. That sounds excellent. And came out for what I thought was going to be sort of 3-4 weeks, and 12, 13 years later, I'm still here. So,
nice. I like to know, like, composing it's a whole other beast because, you know, everybody's been in a band or done something, but when you go to the level of composing, so you create these compositions, as I believe you guys call them.
I mean, he's a composer.
Yep. And then you get a whole bunch of people in a room together to play the music. What are some of the challenges in that? I mean, is there sometimes where the triangle guy just is not hitting it?
Oh, wow.
And you have to scream at him, or how does this work?
Well, the beauty of the this level, I mean, like with the musicians you get to use, especially, you know, you're recording in London or LA, these guys, they don't make mistakes. I've tried, Lord knows I've tried to write things like ludicrously hard just to see what they'll do. and it's really annoying because it doesn't, you can put anything in front of it, provided it's, you know, like physically possible on the instrument. they'll do it and they'll do it first take, and you go down the first take and the first take sounds great and you go, okay, let's just do one to cover it and make sure we've got it. But, you know, it's the level of musicianship of these guys is, you know, and it's all across all disciplines. You know, I've worked a lot with, you know, people from bands and, you know, get to work with some amazing musicians, like guitarists, you know, non-classical guys, non-orchestral guys. So, you know, there's a guitarist I work with a lot, this guy, Mick Murphy, who's plays in a band in LA called My Ruin, who is sort of, you know, coming up on the metal scene. They have a good following. They have a great following in Europe as well. But this guy is just literally, I mean, he's technically one of the greatest musicians I've seen, bar none. I mean, this guy just literally, you can put anything in front of him, and his ability to just play it and make it sound way cooler than you ever thought it was going to sound. It's an interesting process. You know, music is something that you so often is you do sitting in a room on your own.
Yeah.
And you sort of and then it's something that, you know, when you get to collaborate with these fabulous musicians, they make you look good. It's pretty hard to make them sound too terrible.
Do you find any difference between like the video game musicians and like the movie musicians, or is it just pretty much all the same across the board?
It's pretty much the same now. You know, it's sort of, there's a few people sort of, you know, more on the sort of composing side who will sort of specialize in just doing video games or just doing, you know, there's a lot of guys who just do commercials, and, you know, there's, you know, you find your niche and you find sort of, you know, what people will hire you for. But it's, you know, I think generally the with when you get the session musicians, it's a similar crowd. It's this, it's usual faces, the usual suspects sort of crop up, but there's a vast array of amazing talent to choose from. It's kind of a luxury and a great privilege as well. So
we recently did an interview with a up and coming composer. His name was Steve Goldschein. Steve? Yeah. What?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. It's in the name.
We're destined for greatness.
Wow.
So Steve Goldschein's doing indie games, just coming out of school. And one question we asked him, which I thought was kind of fascinating, was in this field of composing for movies and video games, when you're at a movie and you're listening, are there certain rules or some things, motifs that are getting overdone or overplayed that you try and stay away from?
Well, there are. I mean, there's it's even not necessarily motif. It's certain sounds, and usually they go through a vogue. I mean, the one right now is the Inception,
kind of sound. Yeah, everywhere.
And it's just but the problem is it's so usually what's annoying about these things is they're usually really good. the Inception thing is a really good idea. And the bottom line is it's sort of like especially when an editor cuts in a temp track on a film and they put it up and you see and one of these kind of things comes up, you just sit there and you're sort of in the screen and going, oh God, because you just know. But you've either got to beat it or you've got to do it. You do usually sort of, you know, there's no sort of it's one of those things where unless you can present them a better idea, mm-hmm. they usually want you to sort of go there. And then if you do have to go there, you have to figure out a way of going there without actually, you know, kind of doing exactly the same thing. So yeah, it's often one of those things. It's often more about an individual sound or an individual sort of way of doing things. You know, it's but mercifully there aren't too many of them. There's a few, that being the one du jour at the moment.
Question I've always kind of had about these situations is you're doing the Titanfall. The only music I've honestly heard is from the trailers and the teasers and the little bit of gameplay I've seen, and it does have its own unique sound to me, which I'm really looking forward to listening to it more. But the other thing, like, so when Titanfall expands or makes an expansion, are you on the books for that already, or do they have to recall you and have you do this again?
I don't, you know, to be honest, I don't know. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, Respawn have typically. You know, when they've done things, have generally, on the Call of Duties, for example, you know, no two Call of Duties were done by the same composer, which was a really interesting approach. You know, you had everyone from like the Giacchino
first. Oh, we're losing you a little bit. Hold on, let's.
Oh, sorry.
I don't want to miss this gold. Go ahead.
There we go. Shall I jump back? Would that be useful?
Just a little bit, yeah. So you were mentioning Call of Duty switches their composers.
Well, exactly. That's the thing. Yeah, I mean, when you come on for one of these things, you never sort of know necessarily how they're going to go and whether it's going to turn into a franchise of 10 games or whether it's going to be two or three, or one. You know, you never know. But the Call of Duty front was interesting, that side of things, because they've never reused a composer, and it's been this sort of interesting cycle where Hans Zimmer did one, Brian Tyler did one, Michael Giacchino did one, and then I was sort of looking at little old me doing one, and I'm like, wow. I mean, you know, that's very nice of them. Just company. It's very, very good. But yeah, so, you know, I think you generally just sort of focus on the single game that you're doing, and then if down the line there's a few more, then that would be fabulous. That'd be awesome. You know, I think we've definitely tried to create a sound world that's sort of got a distinctive sound to it. But then here's the thing. I mean, they, you know, on the next one, they might be another 1,000 years in the future and looking for a different sound, for that kind of sound world, or, you know, or it might be, maybe they'll do a prequel. It's one of those things you just never know what they've got next up their sleeve, so it's fun to wait and see.
I got a question for you. So like music, like I know for me and Aaron, whenever we write or try to come up with ideas, we like to listen to music and kind of get influenced. So for a composer, you know, what do you do to kind of get you in that zone, get you influenced? And so do you go and just listen to other composers and kind of build an idea, or do you just kind of have another routine to help you inspire you?
I have a thing I do, which is like, I it's one of those things, generally, funny enough, you know, on films, usually when you come onto a film, they've got temp music in. So they'll have music sort of synced up with the film and edited in just to give them an idea for a screening, just because it's really disconcerting to watch a film without any music in it.
Yeah.
So they'll usually have cut it in. And so that will often be there. But then what I like to look for in music and just stuff that, you know, that sets off ideas for me is like things where there's one cool sound, where there's a really interesting idea. And it might even be something that sort of, you know, is really short and like no one else cares about, but it's sort of part of the whole. And, you know, like one example I've used, you know, I was talking with someone the other day actually and saying like one example is, you know, like if you listen to like Radiohead albums, there's a lot of sort of interesting sounds there. And even when I find a song that I'm less keen on, there might be something in there that I'm like, oh, that's a cool sound. You know, there's the one that springs to mind, sort of like there's that song Everything in Its Right Place.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to the first 10 seconds of that song, it's just one sound. It's like this electric piano sound. And it's a really simple sound on the face of it. But then if you sort of crank it and really listen to it, it's got this kind of weird thing going on where it's got this sort of super wide, especially if you're living on headphones, it's got this super wide kind of sound to it. And it just sounds really full and complete. And that, you know, that's one great sound. So it's usually those kinds of things. I go listening for sort of, you know, kind of different ways of treating things. And I love listening to music where I don't know how it was done. And I sort of want to try and figure out how it was done.
So the people listening right now, you're getting a school lesson right now in composership. Let's bring it back to the video games. So, Steven, let's talk a little bit about your video game history. Are you a gamer, as we like to be called? Do you play video games?
I am very much. And it's funny, back when I started working with Harry Gregson Williams, he on that particular school front, he went at high with polar opposites. I think the only video game he'd played was Pong. And this was, you know, when we were working on Metal Gear Solid, and, you know, and I think, you know, they were sort of sending things over, and it was just one of those things that he'd never sort of necessarily got into playing. But I started out, like, I was, you know, kind of with the old Spectrum ZX, you know, the real, where you'd sort of, you know, practically have to write it in like BASIC, and then, you know, write the program and hit enter, and then you got your game. But because we didn't have the memory card, so yeah. I just had to sort of type it in. But then I think the thing that really got me hooked was Doom, actually. That was kind of my like you know, realizing that this was something pretty cool. So I played a lot of Doom, and we used to hook Doom up with like null modem cables, so you got a sort of semi multiplayer experience.
Yeah,
which
that's awesome.
which was the way of the future. But and it seemed, you know, it just seemed amazing at the time. But it was you know, I think, and it's funny how many of the sort of the basic ideas of first person shooters were in that game, and were there, everything was there. It was pretty amazing that was so ahead of its time.
Do you think you have to be a gamer to be a successful composer in the video game industry?
I don't think you necessarily have to, but I think that now, because of the nature, and especially this will become more true in the next, you know, few years and in the next decade, is that the nature of the game requires, you know, you to think about how the piece of music is structured. So, you know, especially as things are more online, especially as you're looking more at these sort of massively multiplayer games, that, you know, you're kind of going to have to know how the music's going to be used. And I'm not sure there's a better way to do that than just playing it. But I think you can obviously write great music without necessarily having picked up a game console in your life. But it's more sort of how it integrates into the game, and it's becoming much more complex and much more sort of like, you know, almost like, you know, having to build like kind of a logic algorithm to sort of control how the music works. So it's, you know, obviously when you write that takes a little bit more. You sort of have to know what you're writing for. So
my final question for you, because we know you got some appointments. Busy man, you are pretty much at the top of the game. I mean, you're doing major motion pictures, what most people are predicting to be the game of the year. Where do you go? What's your dream? What's the end game here?
I think it's all, you know, hey, it's always, if there's a good story to be told and like a really amazing creative crew, like, you know, the Respawn guys, there's always something new and always something. And that's one of the beauties of, you know, working on film and games, because it's always something different. And one of the things that I enjoy most is like frequently you kind of have to be a chameleon. You kind of have to sort of be able to. I had a thing a few years ago where a movie where I got a call from my agent and they said, oh, you know, like there's this movie there, you know, it's an editor you've worked with. They're interested. And he's like, and I'm like, oh, great. They're fantastic. What's the movie? And they said, oh, well, the music's all sort of like Louisiana blues, and I was like, I'm British and I'm 31. I'm about as un-Louisiana blues as you get, although, you know, so but I, it was one of those situations where I was like, sure, okay. And then spent like, you know, a few weeks listening solidly to everything I could possibly find, and sort of, I don't know, it's kind of almost like there's sometimes a fun of sort of not necessarily being steeped in something like that and becoming fresh to it. You sort of by accident you can come up with something that, and someone told me, like grabbed me afterwards and said, like, they were listening to one thing, they were a guitarist, and they were like, oh, that dobro part was really, you know, that was really interesting, I've never heard that. And it was like purely just because I didn't know how to write for a dobro. I just didn't know what I was doing with it, but it leads you to sort of, you know, kind of, if you go into those uncharted waters, you just have to like use your ears and sort of figure out what sounds good, and so that side of it's fun, you know, you get to try so many different things, and that's great.
Well, Stephen Barton is the man's name. Get ready to hear a lot of him if you plan on picking up Titanfall. The guy is only in the beginning of his career, obviously a star in the making. Tell people where they could find you on the social medias.
Well, you can find me. I'm on Facebook, just Stephen Barton. Google me, you'll probably come up. And otherwise, there's everything for the Respawn world is, you know, at respawn.com and titanfall.com. And you can find my website at afterlightinc.com, which is after and light, as in the after the two lights, like, you know, lights turning on. it should be fun, and we're out March 11th, and the soundtrack should be also out at some point on there on iTunes. I think it's gonna be pretty cool to see what people make of it.
All right, and we'll give you our address after we end the call, so you can send us a copy of Titanfall.
We will do.
All right, Stephen.
Your pleasure.
All right, that was Stephen Barton. I'm looking forward to Titanfall. You guys?
Looking forward to playing it. Yes.
What aren't you looking forward to?
The no single player.
Aww.
I just wanted a story around the robots. That's what.
Why do I need this robot? What's
exactly? What's but I'm purpose? Pretty sure. I mean, from what I've seen from Titanfall, the multiplayer, it looks like they do some type of brief explanations in the multiplayer.
Why did we build this Jaeger?
And Jada, why were you so quiet during that interview?
Wow.
I just
Starstruck?
You know, yeah, you know, I have a thing for composers, people who can make beautiful music.
You're definitely super quiet. Let's get into our last and final story. And guys, I know when we hit the hour mark and we're still going, don't panic. I've got this under control, but Aaron has to rant.
Reiterate before.
The views of Aaron Carter are not those of the rest of the Video Game Bang crew and or NerdReactor.com. He is a rogue.
Aaron Carter does.
He's irrational.
He says
he's
I'm
a
rational.
Lunatic.
Rational, you mean?
Well, Empire Magazine released 25 unique covers for the X-Men Days of Future Past film, and as you can assume, Aaron has some opinions.
As you can assume, you should go to nerdreactor.com and check out the article that I wrote. Also, is not. The views of Nerd
also
Reactor.
Not the views of those are solely Aaron's views.
That's fine though. I you know, I understand.
And so the full article is there. Empire Magazine releases 25 covers for X-Men Days of Future Past, so check it out. This is the first look we're getting at a lot of these key characters from the film.
And it's sad, people.
Let's
it's
start
sad.
With let's start with we're going to kind of scroll through these with the crew. So we're looking at a Sentinel. I don't find anything too bad with the Sentinel.
It looks like it can break easily.
Yeah, it doesn't look very intimidating at all.
Not at all.
Just that it's tall.
And yeah.
We're going to sweep the leg.
It's Sentinel,
just going to fall over.
Sentinel 2. Yeah, and proportioned-wise, from the cartoons I remember, it had those big old beefy legs.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Bulky, yeah.
Yeah.
The whole thing was beefy. Gross.
But I don't know. I'm always more terrified of those more agile giant beast things.
Why?
Because just what's a tank gonna do? Tank is slow.
Damn his bones.
You're gonna, thank you. You're scared of bones. You're gonna trip it. It's gonna break its ankle, and you're just done.
All right, yeah. Sentinel, bing it or bang it.
I'm not even gonna touch it.
Avoiding.
It's terrible.
I'd bang it.
I bet you would. Right in the vent.
In the big vent.
All right. And the next character we are looking at is Havoc.
This is all you, Aaron.
It's just frustrating. Oh, for people that don't know, Havoc is supposed to be the younger brother of Scott Summers, a.k.a. Cyclops, but apparently he was born in the 70s, so he's now the older brother of Cyclops. Why don't we just throw that around? Yeah. I mean, what's going on here? And apparently he was one of the first members of the X-Men?
I was totally confused by that in First Class. I was like, that doesn't make any sense.
And this is what we're spoon-feeding our children. He looks terrible, by the way.
Mm-hmm. All right, the next one, Toad.
That's horrible.
He looks like a neo-Nazi.
He does. Now, apparently these military suits that him and Havoc are wearing tie into the story or whatever, but it looks bad. And I don't know what the Cyclops goggles are on him for.
Consistency-wise, how can they rope Toad into this?
Oh, you got me. I don't know.
Corey, he kind of looks like you with the mohawk. And
There it is.
I used to rock the mohawk. I never had those goggles.
That's the worst.
Let's see. Moving on, we have William Stryker.
Mind-blowing.
Is that Sean William Scott? Is that?
That's what I thought it was. Yeah.
That's what it looks like.
That's what I thought. Stifler.
We got Stifler.
You know what? That one I'll accept for Stryker because he's a military man and this is supposed to be in the past.
Aaron, I want to hear you say you'd bang him.
I wouldn't.
It's simplistic.
And this is my favorite right here.
Your favorite is Dinklage.
Boulevard Trask.
As Boulevard Trask.
I love the use of space in this thing. They kept with the same shot. He barely peeks his head above the X-Men logo.
Yeah, I was about to say the X-Men logo is almost as big as he is.
As an actor, I love that man.
He's awesome.
Oh, yeah, great.
But it still looks like Tyrion Lannister. Is that his name?
Just with the porn star mustache?
Pretty much, yeah. Because he's got the same hair.
Ooh, I take it back. My new favorite is the Mystique one.
Which they haven't changed.
Jennifer
Lawrence. Yeah, they haven't changed. And she's,
which is fine.
That's good, yeah.
It's a good Mystique. It's been great since they launched
it. I'll bang it.
Yeah. I mean, if I was not married, I would consider it.
I'd bang her.
Wow. Let's see. Next is Beast. Not much has changed here.
Oh, that's Beast? I thought that was going to be Nightcrawler. I'm going to be honest. Like, it looked a little slim.
Bring back country grammar.
Country? Oh, Kelsey?
Yeah.
Kelsey Clinton? Chelsea Clinton? Is that you trying to bring back?
Yeah. Nah.
Yeah, it's not
the worst.
They threw Teen Wolf in some
and painted him blue.
Blue. Yeah,
how dare you?
Some blue. Paint.
This is my worst one.
By far the worst.
This is my nightmare.
Quicksilver.
And
leather everywhere.
I was wondering who that was.
Why does he have Batman gadgets on his belt?
He has Batman gadgets, wearing some goofy goggles and some earbuds.
And just so you didn't know that he was a speedster, he's blurry.
Yeah, the blur. God, so bad.
What were the goggles? I understand. Oh, because he
keeps stuff out of his eyes when he's running in the light of the speed of light.
He's emo.
Stupid.
It's the emo Quicksilver.
His parted hair. Everything about this is stupid. And you brought up an interesting point, Aaron. Quicksilver is still going to be a character in the Avengers.
He is still going to be the character in the Avengers.
So
but
we're
going to
have parallel universes.
He's not known as a mutant in the Avengers, though.
That's the only stipulation.
That's the agreement. Yeah, that's the agreement Fox came up with.
I'm really going to be interested. This is going to be... You're going to draw so many comparisons on why Marvel Studios is so much better in just this decision.
And this has been getting sort of kind of a backlash with this Quicksilver. They've been like, nah, it doesn't look too good. This is kind of... What's the director of Avengers? I'm blanking on his name right now. But he can look at this feedback right now and be like, well, when I do my Avengers...
Joss Whedon.
Joss Whedon. When he looks, he can be like, well, when I do my Quicksilver for the Avengers, it won't look anything like that. Yeah. I'm gonna stay close to...
I don't even think he needed it. I bet he like puts this hung up on his mirror when he wakes up in the morning just and laugh and just remember what not to do.
It's just so bad. Like, I don't understand why they thought that was good.
Young Magneto.
I'll deal with that one.
Yeah, that's not
terrible. That's not terrible.
It's got the helmet and it's got the colors.
What else do you want?
It's got the basics, you know.
Yeah.
Magneto
I don't know who that is.
I like the young Charles Xavier.
I don't like that. Of
all the pictures, he looks like he's the only one who's not like posing as like I'm a superhero. Like, he's like in an acting moment.
He definitely looks like he's in the 70s. The style of clothing and the hair.
But nonetheless, Charles Xavier has been bald for like the longest.
Yeah.
And
I don't know.
Well, maybe he'll become bald in the movie.
Maybe we'll find out why. Yeah.
You know what? He's looking at you and he's like, You know what? I know what you're thinking.
I look upset. Stupid. Yeah, exactly.
That's
He's
a
like,
face.
Stop. Wait a minute. Don't tell me.
He's saying,
you're mad.
It's just a paycheck.
From the first class movie, he gets shot in the back. Spoiler, sorry. And then he's paralyzed, but now he's walking?
Well, they go
he's
further.
He's Christopher walking?
They go further back, I guess. That's what they're
going to
say.
Yeah, terrible.
Wolverine, of course, looks awesome.
With bullet holes.
Yeah.
No shirt. This is the
and
one
bone claws.
That your wives are going to
I'd bang
up.
Him.
Wow.
Yeah, I said that.
In the bullet holes?
In the bullet holes.
That's terrible.
He's a handsome man.
Is that Jonah right. Hill?
That's the man responsible for this.
That's Brian Singer.
Atrocity.
Yeah, even he doesn't look happy.
Yeah, he's like, I know, guys. I'm sorry.
He's like, I'm just doing this to try to get picked up by Marvel.
We have Adamantium Wolverine back in his weird suit.
Here's
which,
my
again,
theory,
make
too.
Sense to
here's a theory that I just came up with. I'm thinking since Wolverine is kind of the...
Hold on, before you say this theory, I would like to say that whatever Aaron's theory is about to be, it does not reflect the rest of Video Game Bang.
You probably will agree.
Okay.
You probably will agree. Since Wolverine seems to be the household name with people that don't really know the universe, the Marvel universe, mm-hmm. they probably spent the most time designing his character to look closer to, you know, what everybody's used to, as opposed to everybody else that we don't really know. You know, the average person wouldn't know who a Quicksilver is or something like that. So that's probably why his character looks the best out of every single X-Men.
I agree with that. I mean, look at the movie's spinoffs.
Yeah.
The X-Men, he got his own kind of Wolverine spin-off.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, Wolverine is the household X-Men name now.
You know, when I was younger and didn't know anything about the universe, I thought X-Men was Wolverine. Like, I thought that mm-hmm. was, his name was X-Men. And like when I was a little kid, I remember.
Well, they had the yellow
that.
With the blue X
yeah.
across it.
So it's like, yeah, that's him. Crippled Jean-Luc Picard
yeah,
here.
Next
is,
up, we have Patrick Stewart as in his futuristic wheelchair. No wheel.
It seems to just float there.
So it's just a floating chair.
Yeah.
Floating chair.
Why does he, you know, he's already been psychic. Why does he always had a wheelchair in the beginning? Why couldn't he just, you know, kind of.
Well, I mean, the Fox 41 had a floating wheelchair, which
is
pretty
dope.
That
is true.
So, I mean.
Old school Magneto, Serene McKellen.
I'll deal with that one. He just mm-hmm. looks like a
Where's
old,
Gandalf's staff?
He looks like a Star Wars Darth person, though.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my girl.
Yeah, I'd rather have her.
Halle Berry.
Mohawk.
Halle Berry. You want her to have
bang
a mohawk?
That and Mystique.
Yeah, she's the future Storm.
Nah, how much would they have had to pay Halle Berry to go full out with a
Who? What was the chick that did V for Vendetta?
Yeah, but that was a great movie.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm giving to you.
No,
I'll give you that one.
That was in the name of art.
This is going to be terrible.
They said, Halle Berry, what do you think about a mohawk? And she laughed in their faces. She said, for this movie?
Call me when Marvel picks up the script.
Yeah. number 17, Rogue.
Could care less.
I heard
she
not
bangs
even in
vampires.
The movie.
I heard she was in the movie. They had like a somewhere online, they said they leaked some plots from it, and she's in the future, and they actually show her with super strength and flight.
Oh, really?
Yeah, fighting a Sentinel.
I heard that she was supposed to be in the movie, and then they ended chopping it on the cutting room floor.
It could still be. It could still be.
And of course, if you notice, she's in the standard female hero pose.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Showing butt.
Yep. Warpath.
Who cares? He actually
yeah.
looks like Warpath, though.
He does
look like Warpath, but nobody cares.
A little Rufio.
He's not as big as Warpath. If everybody doesn't know, he looks like a giant Indian. Is what the comic book character Warpath looks like. This guy does look like a giant reject from the Black Eyed Peas.
that's terrible.
Oh, what's that guy's name?
Taboo.
Taboo.
That's Taboo with knives in his hands.
And Kitty Pride.
You can't really
she
go wrong.
She looks like she
that.
Doesn't know what's
Page.
Going on.
Yeah.
Inception.
They took that.
Inception.
That's actually a still from
Juno.
Beyond.
Beyond Two Souls.
Yeah, that's Beyond Two Souls.
That's mm-hmm. terrible.
Let's see, Sunspot.
What is?
Tell God honest truth. I don't even know who Sunspot is. That's probably that's irritating.
Maybe it's this angle I'm looking at, but like it looks like his nose is just completely like Pinocchio'd.
Yeah,
I think
he looks like he's about to say Hadouken.
I think that may be. I thought he was Asian. I could be wrong. I don't know.
With Warpath here, we have Blink.
I'd bang it again.
She's in the Marvel Ultimate Alliance too.
Yeah,
I'd take
Teleporter.
I actually like that. Yeah. That's actually probably my favorite so far.
Yeah. When I first saw it, before I looked at the name, I was thinking, God, I hope that's not Psylocke.
No, oh,
Psylocke.
God, no.
Okay.
Because of the two,
sorry.
Like she had a staff looking thing right here in her mm-hmm. hand.
I remember who Sunspot is, sorry. Sunspot does not look like that.
I could have told you that.
if for our non-viewers at home,
wow,
there's Sunspot, yeah. Corey. Mm.
Nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
They couldn't put him in blackface.
The
that's true.
There's been a lot of internet buzz about the hugely oversized vest that they put on Iceman.
It's to keep him warm.
Yeah, he's Iceman, duh.
You know?
Still looks stupid. Extremely stupid.
A little grizzled, though, the beard. I got to give him props for the beard.
Oh, my gosh.
And I am okay with this one. Why are you upset with Bishop, Aaron?
Because, first of all, he looks like a mix between an underworld black guy, the Terminator, and a Rastafarian. Like, they couldn't decide what to put, you know, let's just throw everything on him. I don't like that Bishop.
Did you want him to have the long Jerry Curl mullet thing, in the cartoon?
No, I wanted the bald Bishop.
Oh.
I wanted bald-headed Bishop. But I'm thinking, and the only reason why I'm thinking they probably didn't go that route
is because they couldn't get Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't want those comparisons brought up, so they're like, let's give them the dreads that look like they stink. And let's give him some crackhead red eyes, you know, to, I guess, say that he has powers.
He looks like he's feigning for crack.
I like that.
Colossus, that's really good,
Colossus.
Too.
Colossus is badass.
But there's, and that is just stupid.
This is the future Sentinels.
Yes. Now,
is this the day the Earth stood still? What is that?
Do you guys remember a character from the Fox 40 X-Men? Not a character, but a robot from the future called Nimrod.
Mm-hmm.
And it was chasing Bishop through time, pretty much, is what they had on the Fox 40 one. I'm guessing that's what that's supposed to be.
Hmm.
Okay. I could.
Now, it looks like a different
interpretation. Doesn't look like a robot anymore.
No. Well, Nimrod kind of didn't look like a robot.
It's sentient?
I think it's supposed to be like sentient. Like, it's supposed to like try to blend in, if I remember right.
But Nimrod, that one could probably, I don't know. It's just the whole series is already just tanked.
That was 25 covers? I liked 5.
Yeah. So, Aaron, the article went a little more in depth. Give us a few more details of your thoughts.
Well, the thing that I think I have the biggest problem with is the stories of the X-Men are being a disservice because they're not being told the correct way. And then I even kind of, when I was writing it, I was thinking back where I watched Willy Wonka. We've all watched the original Willy Wonka with Gene Wilder. Well, apparently the one with, what's his name? What's the guy?
Who just Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp.
Everything's so weird.
Apparently.
Everything's so chocolatey.
Where's the rum?
Apparently his version was closer to the book than Gene Wilder's was. And so that's a good example, though, to me, of making the book, in movie form, that's better than, you know,
the book.
Because the Gene Wilder one is the better one.
See, this is where
way better.
The Gene Wilder one was so much better.
Way better. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't close to the book. So that's Nimrod, yes. So
Aaron pointed to himself when he said that.
Wow, how dare you.
That image.
Yeah, no.
So I understand when you want to translate book to movie or whatever, but, you know, you want to keep the essence of the book or the comic book or whatever source material that you got, you want to keep it, you know, true.
There's a whole generation, a few generations actually, going that are, you know, breathing right now that didn't have the original X-Men cartoon we had.
Yeah,
and I think
we
take that for granted because they're not going to know the stories we know.
And that's a travesty. Like, these stories are all good. And then, like I wrote in the article, the stories and the origins of these characters have been retold over and over again by different artists, different writers, you know, and why would you change that all of a sudden right now? Like, the whole thing that I said earlier with Havoc being older than Cyclops is now, it's just like, that just changes their whole background story. You know, them falling out of a plane.
You're going to go to the conference like that red shirt kid from WoW.
I might have to.
Mr. Singer.
I definitely would.
In the original comic series, Havoc.
And I want to know why. Why would you change something like that?
That's a major change.
Yeah, that's like saying Bruce Wayne, his Uncle Ben died, and that's why he became Batman. And his parents are still around. That's how
they just kicked him out.
Far deviating from the story that they're doing, and I don't understand why they would do something like that. That's why I'm really hoping they just wipe the slate clean, and they say, with this next series that we're going to do, we're going to start from the beginning, and we're going to show you the original first cast, the Cyclops, the Beast, Miss Marvel, Marvel Girl, Jean Grey. You know, go back to its roots.
I want to hit up a couple bite-sized bangers. We like to call these little short stories. So are you guys familiar with the work of a Mr. Josh Gad?
No.
He was a voice in Frozen, which he's kind of hot for right now. He was also in... He plays Wozniak in the Ashton Kutcher Apple movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Comedian,
I don't know
mostly
is.
Guy. You don't know who he is?
I still don't know who
he was in that show about the president and his family.
He was in that thing with the person.
So they had the eyes and the mouth.
What is he going to do? What is he going to do?
Well, it doesn't matter because... what's his name? Josh Trank denies the rumor that Josh Gad was going to be the thing in Fantastic Four.
Yeah, so he's not going to be like, where's the sugar? He's
not going to get to do that. And his voice, I mean, I think he's hilarious. I love his brand of comedy, but I don't think, you know.
Bring back the chicklist.com.
Might as well, yeah. Let's get it started now.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking Ron Perlman would be a great voice for that.
He doesn't.
I think he's too old. Deep.
No, I wouldn't see Ron Perlman. I don't know who could play the thing now. Actually, I don't know. That's why I'm saying I'm sticking with Steve and bring back the chicklist.
Chicklist was fine.
If they chose Gad, it would have went in a whole different direction. Yeah. Then you might as well get Jim Carrey as Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah. That's like getting Jack
Adam
Black
Sandler.
I would watch that.
I would actually watch that.
I would watch that. Adam Sandler is the torch
look
guy.
Look at Miss Stretch.
And then what's her name? Sarah Silverman?
Oh, God. Worst movie ever.
Worst Fantastic Four reboot.
Wow. Other quick little story. Sly Cooper is getting a full feature animated film in 2016.
That'd be cool.
Just like Ratchet & Clank is getting their full feature in 2015.
That way I don't know.
Where's the Crash Bandicoot?
You know, the only one I'd actually want to see. I have no interest in any of these
movies. What story would they coming with?
Yeah. See, Ratchet is the only one I'm excited for. Maybe it's because I never got into the Sly Coopers, but I love the Ratchet series.
That's our show, everybody. Thank you so much for sticking with us. Big special thanks to Steven Barton.
Wow.
No one cares about you, Steven. We'll see you on the internet.